future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who with it now?
Hour number two of the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back in Houston. Glad to have you listening to the show. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, and John Belmer with you here for another hour. I believe we'll be back next week because the Aggies are playing in primetime, I think is what I saw. So
it's a short show.
That's right. It's a short show. I think we go. Yeah, their pregame will start at 1:30. Are you running that pregame?
I am.
All right. So, that's going to be a long day for you, Cam. My condolences. Yes. But we'll be 12 to 1:30 then next week. It's a short show next week. But we will be on the air. And I think I was looking at the schedule. We'll pretty much be on the air most weeks. I know in November they play like a nobody school that'll start at 11 a.m., so we'll be off one of the weeks in November. But I think we'll be on for the most part. Aggie's schedule seems to be interacting with us quite well here. All right, so again, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. One more hour left here at the bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Belmer. So Astros lose. I said a tough one going into break. I don't even know if I call it a tough one because they're never really in it. Like Julio Rodriguez hits the first inning home run. And that was all they needed. They end up scoring three more runs for a 4-0 win, but the Mariners only needed the one run. And let's be fair, like Hunter Brown, I thought Hunter Brown was really good. I mean, he goes six innings, two earned runs, struck out nine. And that first inning home run to Julio that ended up being the winning run, that ball was a hard sinker. Low. Not only was it low and in, like far out of the zone, but the broadcast, I don't know if you saw this, they put up the like heat map, the heat chart for Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And that area, like low and inside the plate, is a dark, dark cold zone, like a dark blue cold zone for Julio Rodriguez. So not only was it, well off the plate and inside, but it was in a cold zone for Julio, and Julio just hit it 10 miles out.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those pitches you can't blame him. It's like that. No, it's like years ago when Vladimir Guerrero hit that home run off that ball that basically hit the dirt.
I'm pretty sure Vlad has at least one home run where a ball bounced.
Like, you can't fault the pitcher for that.
No, you can't. So, Astros now fall back to one game behind the Mariners. Only one and a half, I think, more importantly, one and a half up on the Guardians for the final playoff spot. Now, the Astros do have Fromber and Jason Alexander going the next 2 days, but I think it's not really that great of a thing for the Astros because, one, Fromber's been super shaky since August, and two, the Mariners are throwing George Kirby and Logan Gilbert at you, which are better than, at least right now, certainly better than Jason Alexander, but right now also better than Fromber. So I still think it's advantage Mariners the next 2 days. I think the Astros are going to have to start looking at the wild card, but you know what? I'm done talking about the Astros.
Yeah, that's enough.
They scored zero runs. I already gave them more than 0 minutes. They've already gotten more than deserved. So let's get back to football.
Bye, bitch.
Yeah, bye, bitch. Talk to me when you score a run. All right, Cam, we got NFL picks to make. Before we pick this week's games, why don't you update the standings for us?
I would absolutely love to. So, after last week...
We need to get picks from Sean. I know Sean's a little busy. We'll have to just discount this week.
Yeah, him. I might be able to text him a little later.
He's
a little preoccupied,
preoccupied.
Not sure I want to do that. We'll just go from a worst record to best record.
I'm looking at who I assume has the worst record right
so
now. Looking right in his face.
After last
his
week.
Dumb face.
John coming in at 1-4.
Oh!
John, can't tell you how bad everything you did here was.
Thank you, John.
B-Mac and Sean, a respectable 3-2.
All right.
And
please get degrees, baby.
No surprise here. Me sitting on top, 4-1.
4-1. What was the one you missed?
Denver Indy.
Oh, that was one of the ones I got right. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So 4-1, 3-2, and 1-4 for John behind the glass. All right. So what games are we picking this week, Cam? Hit us with the first one.
We're going to start off with New England versus Pittsburgh.
Now, these first four are all just straight up, right?
All just straight up.
Okay. New England versus Pittsburgh. New England at home. I believe Pittsburgh is a small favorite, but this was actually one of the games I considered when we did two favorites and a dog on Jeremy and Joe. But I'm going to take the New England Patriots in this game. Now, my bet on the show Friday was more that the point spread, I believe it's 1.5.
I think it's one, yeah.
But I think the Patriots won outright. I'll pick the Patriots in this game.
So I have the Steelers, and John is with you. He's got New England.
I don't like that. Oh. I like my pick list.
Hey, wait a second.
What, do you want to switch now?
Is it too late to switch now?
We'll keep the second game here at home. Jacksonville versus Houston.
Jacksonville. I don't like saying it, but I don't believe, as you could feel evidenced by the first hour of the show, I do not believe in Nick Cayley. I'm going to pick Jacksonville home.
Interesting. So me and Big John both have Houston.
Really? I'm on an island on this one? I'm a lone wolf?
As bad as the offense has been, I can't see them going 0-3. Now, if it was somebody else besides...
Is this a they need it more argument?
Yes, and if it wasn't Jacksonville, I might be more inclined to go with the other team, but I can't imagine them being starting 0-3 because of a loss to Jacksonville.
Also, the Texans play really well division games on the road. So,
well, yeah, and I can't remember who pointed this out. I think it was Taylor Dahl, who also works at 1010XL, we talked to yesterday. But she pointed out that the Texans have won like 7 straight games in Jacksonville.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Something like that. So, look, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for your side of the argument, you and John. Their unwillingness to play young players like Jalen Nolan and Woody Marks, the struggles with the offensive line, an offensive coordinator who for some reason doesn't believe in motion, they've scored what touchdowns in like 2 quarters out of 8 so far.
That's pretty bad.
There's not. I see where you're going. I just haven't seen anything that gives me faith that they're going to have a magic turnaround.
Yeah, but, and I would
I guess
like,
I'll be a lone wolf there.
And I would like to make the argument that okay, you know, the first two games, Matt Stafford, Baker Mayfield, way up here, Trevor Lawrence,
fair
down here.
Fair.
But if you look at the numbers, Trevor Lawrence outside of the interceptions has produced more than CJ.
Games.
So yeah.
No, Oof, God. Anyway, third game.
We'll switch to another divisional game. We have the Chargers versus the Broncos.
Are you gonna throw the Chargers in every week?
Probably, and Houston. But this is not this every game, week, this is a good game.
You know what? I tease, but this game is in L.A. I believe the Chargers are 2.5-point favorite last I saw. Is that correct? Or is it 3.5?
I think it's up to 3.5 now.
Either way, they were one of my picks when we did 2 favorites and a dog on the show on Friday. So I will pick, not just pandering here, but I will pick the Chargers to win.
I obviously chose Chargers. And John, he's going against my Chargers again.
Oh, John, what are you doing? You're going Broncos here?
I'm going Broncos here, yeah.
Is this a gut feel?
Well, their defense.
Or is this an FU to Cam?
I think they'll get a little bit of both.
Okay.
We'll call it a 50-50 split.
Man, John might be looking at 1-4 again.
This game is actually pretty intriguing to me. Chicago versus Dallas.
Dallas, I was surprised they're a road favorite. I don't know if that's still the line, but I know yesterday was Dallas -1.5. Joe is trying to sell me that Caleb Williams hasn't played that poorly. I see part of what he's saying. I don't fully agree with that opinion. I think Dallas is going to go and win a shootout because Dallas defense sucks. We saw what Russell Wilson did against them last week. He rose up from the grave and threw for like 400 something yards.
It's crazy that he leads the league in passing yards.
Because he threw for like 400 plus. Yeah. It was really off of one game. I thought for a moment he was going to get to 500, but you know, fell short there with the interception at the end. Yeah, I'm going to pick Dallas in this game.
Dallas. What did you say the line
I
was?
Thought it was Dallas -1.5.
So it's down to Dallas -1.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you and Johnny are on the board together, crap. Dallas. I went the opposite direction, and I'm going to go with Chicago on this
Man,
one.
Johnny might be dragging me down here. Strapped an anchor to my ankle and
hey.
Pulling me down to the bottom of the sea.
Nobody said you had to strap yourself to him.
No. We should make Johnny go first. So that way we can always just pick the
opposite.
I love you, Johnny.
All right,
last game.
Our tiebreaker, which is against the spread, we're going to do the Eagles.
Hold on. Is it a tiebreaker or we just – like because you just gave us – like you were 4-1, I was 3-2. We're just counting them all.
Yeah, because
– Is it really a tiebreaker?
It's not technically one. I guess if we were to do it week by week, there would be a tiebreaker. But if we're going to add up the overall record,
yeah.
I guess it doesn't break down to a tiebreaker.
Maybe if we tie,
it's just a
maybe
little
if we
different.
Tie an overall record of the year, we can use who did better.
The
spreads. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, continue.
So Eagles versus Rams, and Philly is a 3.5-point favorite.
Remind me, where's that game at?
It's in Philly.
It's in Philly, and it's Philly minus
3.5.
That's a good number. That is a good number.
Yeah, because I think that basically would tell you that if it was in L.A., it would be 3.5 for the Rams.
Well, usually home field advantage is worth three points.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess Philly would be a half a pointer. But.
Yeah, it'd basically be a pick 'em in L.A., I think is what Vegas is telling us here. I think if it was 2.5 or under, like I wouldn't even think about it. I'd just say Eagles, because I do expect them to win the game. The 3.5 complicates things because it kind of feels like an Eagles 3-point win.
Yeah.
But I will take Eagles and the points. Give me Eagles minus 3.5.
Okay. So you actually don't have to agree with John on this.
Oh,
one.
All right. Yeah, I got a chance to get that one right.
Me and Johnny went with the Rams and you're with the Eagles. So.
All right. Fly, Eagles, fly, baby. All right. That's all our games here.
That's
right?
All our picks.
All right. On the other side of the break, when the bullpen returns, we'll get into some football and, or football. We get into some more NFL and college football because right now Clemson and they just scored a touchdown to get a little bit closer, but they're struggling at home against Syracuse. It was 24-7. They just scored a touchdown. It's about to be 24-14 if they get the extra point. So we'll talk about that more and some other things around the college football world when we get back. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, welcome back into The Bullpen. Before we get into the college football conversation, I've got to give a few more of my worst Texans losses, regular season losses, because that was the big question today. What are the worst regular season losses in Texans history? And I'm stressing regular season because I know this happened on Thursday when I went through, I was like, where's the Chiefs collapse 24-0? It's like, again, it's regular season. Because if we encompass all games, we would all just pick playoff games because obviously those are more important. I mentioned the Jaguars, the Hail Mary that Glover Quinn batted into Mike Thomas's arms. That was number five. Number four on my list, I just had to say, one word. I guess it's like a combined word, but you'll still get it. Rosencopter.
Yeah. Same season, too, wasn't it?
It was. No, they were actually 2 years apart. Rosencopter was 2008. The Jags Hail Mary was 2010. So if you don't remember Rosencopter, which I don't know how you couldn't, the Texans had a 17-point lead under 5 minutes before Sage Rosenfels decided to jump up in the air and get spun around like a helicopter, fumbled, and the Colts completed the comeback. Ended up winning a game. They were trailing by 17 points with 5 minutes left. The craziest thing, if you pull up the highlight, you'll see it. The craziest thing about that Sage Rosenfels play is, like, it would make sense to dive like that if you're 1 yard away.
Mm-hmm.
He dove 4 yards away. Like, there was no world. Even if he doesn't get hit while in the air, there was no world he was getting that first down.
Access denied.
Just so bad. So that was the number four. And the number three, this is also another, like, a name game. I don't have to tell you, like, well, week five of the whatever. Like, I'll just say the name of the game. Letterman Jacket.
Yep, there it
Letterman
is.
Letterman Jacket.
I mean, for it. Yep.
The Texans were 11-1 coming to the game. They put on those goofy-ass high school Letterman jackets. And the Patriots ended up beating them 42-14.
Yeah.
I agree with you, the Letterman, but they were going to lose that game regardless.
Sure, but 42-14?
Regardless.
Yeah, I know. It was pretty bad. All right, let's give them some college football. If you have your own worst Texans losses, text those in to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I'll reveal the last two before the show's over. So first question for my college football storylines I want to run by you guys, and involves my team, Texas Longhorns. My question to you guys is, how long does Arch Manning keep this job? Like, I know it might sound crazy to people who haven't watched every snap like I have, although if you've seen the stats, then you probably will get it, especially when he went 10 straight incompletions against, who was it they played? Oh, it was
UTEP.
UTEP. God, 10 straight incompletions against UTEP. And these, it's not like these are 10 straight incompletions, oh, where it's a 30-yard, 50-50 ball. The guy didn't come down with it. These are 5-yard crossers, like little outs to the flat, you know, curl routes where he's just sailing it high, sailing it wide left or right, bouncing it to guys in some cases. Like, he is arguably the most inaccurate quarterback I can remember seeing.
Yeah, and what makes it funnier
to a point where he's got to be to a point where I hope he's injured.
That's a strong statement.
There was a I don't know if he was a radio host, but I know he covers UT, and it was funny because he was going on a rant, and he was basically like, how does Archie Manning look so terrible against a school where people go there to dig tunnels?
I mean, come on, man. It's a miner's joke. Yeah. It's a miner's joke.
But so I get it.
So looking at their schedule, they play Sam Houston tonight. They'll be fine, even if Arch continues to be ass. Here's where it starts to get tough. And my question is to you, as I'm going to go through these games, if Arch continues to play like this, Cam, stop me when I get to the point where you bench him, because I have my own answer. I'm seeing if you agree with me. So they beat Sam Houston tonight. They have a bye week the following week. After that, first week in October at Florida. Now, DJ Lagway also not playing well. I think the defense could win that one like 10-7, honestly.
Yeah.
That might be that sort of game. So I think he survives there. Do you see him surviving that?
Yes.
Okay. Next week in the Cotton Bowl, the Red River Shootout, Oklahoma, John Mateer. If Arch plays like ass against Oklahoma, John Mateer looks great. Is Arch benched the next week?
No.
I'm agree. I think he survives that. And then he gets into a stretch where I think he can maybe look good, although he didn't even look good against UTEP, so everything's on the table here. He goes to Kentucky, to Mississippi State, two teams at the bottom of the SEC. I think he survives those.
Agreed.
Here's where I think he runs into the wall that eventually gets him benched. They are at home against number 20 Vanderbilt, number 20 as of now. I mean, Vanderbilt just put boots to ass against South Carolina. That game was competitive last year in Nashville between Vanderbilt and Texas, although it shouldn't have been, but Texas let him back in the game. I think if he plays poorly against Vanderbilt, and if Texas loses at home to Vanderbilt, you know, a smart kid's school, I think he gets benched going into the next week, which is at Georgia. I think if Arch continues to play like this, they will not continue to put him out there going into that Georgia game, which is November 15th. I think that's the point of no return for Arch. Thoughts?
That's tricky.
I know you don't want to put like a first-time starter again at Georgia. I get it. But if Arch is this bad, how do you justify running him out there?
It's just hard because so much was invested into him.
Yeah, literally.
Like, I know he's not an NFL quarterback, but it's still almost the equivalent of investing in your college quarterback. So I just...
Yeah, but it's Texas. They're not worried about that. It's the richest athletic department in the nation.
I mean, I guess at that point, UT would have, what, two losses? Maybe?
Now they have one. I think they lose to Oklahoma. And then in this scenario, I think they lose to Vanderbilt. So they'd have three losses.
So if they have three losses, then yeah, I can see him getting benched. Because at that point, you know there's no hope that you're going to make the playoffs.
You're not going to
make
the
playoffs. Now you're just seeing what you have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's it. So let's go out to the HRMP listener line right now. We have some more college football topics we'll get into. But Cam is joining us. Not this Cam. It looks like it's another Cam. Also wants to talk about Arch Manning. What's going on, Cam?
Yeah, hey guys, love the show, big fan. I hate that you said we're going to lose to Oklahoma. That's absolutely unacceptable. If that happens, I don't know what I would do. Outside of that, I don't see Arch getting benched in any manner. You have to give him a full season to let him see it through. I know it's been ugly. I'm a huge fan. I've watched every snap. I know he's looked rough, to say the least. But that doesn't mean that he's not still a Manning and that he doesn't deserve to at least have a full year to see it through. I feel like I'm a lot like you. We're just hoping for the best and seeing it through. So far, I'm not impressed either. But I don't see him getting the curtain early. I don't know how that happens. If it does, it's going to be a tragedy for Longhorn Nation. And I just wanted to get y'all's thoughts on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Cam, for the nice comments and also the call and listening to the show. Like, I think what Cam hit on there, he mentioned in part of his reasoning why he couldn't see Arch getting the hook, is because of the last name on the back of his jersey.
It's valid.
It is valid, and it is. You can definitely make the argument. It's what got him here. because like the level of competition he played at against in high school in New Orleans, like Lance has talked about, lots of people have talked about, like the high school competition he played against in New Orleans was pretty low level.
Yeah.
Like nothing compared to what major Texas high school football would be. So, and then on top of that, he goes 2 years where he only has two starts. And on top of that, he has a few other games where he comes in or he runs Wildcat. He looked fine last year. He played a directional. He started against a directional school in Mississippi State. But again, that's a directional school that you're supposed to beat by 50 in Mississippi State, who went 0 for the entire SEC season last year. Like the worst team in the SEC. So, like, there was really nothing to judge Arch on, because his high school career was against lesser competition. His only two starts in college up until the season were also against the bottom level competition that they could possibly face. So there wasn't a lot to judge on him. The only thing I could really judge on him is this year, and I hope he's hurt, because I don't feel like this is even a hot take. He's the most inaccurate quarterback I have seen. And look, the schedule, obviously Ohio State in week one, which he was terrible against Ohio State, but you want to dismiss that because they got Caleb Downs, the best safety in the game. You're in Ohio Stadium. You're on the road against the number three team in the nation. A former NFL defensive coordinator, Matt Patricia, had all offseason to game plan for you. Fine, throw that out the window. You then go play San Jose State and UTEP. And I know he threw four touchdowns against San Jose State, but they were wide open, like little just. And even in those passes, like he was not all that accurate. It wasn't like hit the guy in stride, lead him up the field sort of stuff. It was behind, slow down to catch the ball. I mean, it didn't improve hardly at all against San Jose State.
No.
And UTEP.
And it's San Jose State, and it's UTEP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At home. Like, I don't know what else we can. Look, I am, to Cam's point, like, I'm not willing to throw in the towel now, because why would you? You got one loss. Like you said, it's still, there's still the Manning name on the back. You're still hoping to turn things around and make the playoff, which you could still afford to lose another game and make the playoffs. But if you lose to Oklahoma, which, again, Longhorn fan here, but I'm expecting a loss to Oklahoma the way John Mateer is playing. And then especially if you lose to Vanderbilt at home, I think they could beat Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi State just on their defense. But if the offense doesn't play better, they're not going to beat Oklahoma, and I don't think they beat Vanderbilt if the offense doesn't play better. I don't see how Arch survives that. If Sark is serious about doing the most he can this season, if this is about the long game of we got to get Arch right, looking ahead to 2026, then okay.
Yeah.
But I guess that'll be a decision Sark has to make at the time. Like, he'll have to, at that time, decide who am I playing in 2026, and then whoever that guy is, get that guy ready.
Yeah, maybe it's Arch. But that's even the crazier thing, because if you end Archie's season early, you're basically saying you know what you have in him. So then what are you supposed to do with him next year if he decides he wants to come back? It's just a really weird situation that UT is like. There's so much hype, again, with like the name and who he was going into the season. It's just crazy to me that after three games, he's already getting booed.
Oh, yeah. The boo birds were go out in full force against UTEP.
That's crazy. So I think that...
And warranted. Again, 10 straight incompletions at one point. I mean, he's bouncing passes. He's throwing them high. He's throwing, like... And I take it from someone who's watched every snap this year of Longhorn football. These aren't... We're not talking about, oh, well, Arch can't hit, a 30-yard post route into double coverage, which really he should throw anyway. But it's not like this is some super tight window 30 yards down the field. It's just halfbacks going to the flat, curl routes. I mean, we saw in the Ohio State game, how many times did he throw 5 yards behind Ryan Wingo on like a short 2-yard crosser?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about Arch missing, and he's missing it wildly. Like, I really do think there's a high percentage that he's hurt, and for whatever reason, they're just not going to tell us. Because as mid as I thought he was last year, like, there's no reason from what I saw last year, even in those two games, for him to be this bad.
Yeah,
other than injury.
And it would be one thing if these bad games were against ranked opponents.
Yeah, but it's UTEP and San Jose State.
It was arguably, and two wins, but percentage-wise...
They didn't cover.
It was still two bad performances against two really bad teams.
I'm glad you said bad performances, because to me, like, if you're playing UTEP and San Jose State, you have to cover. Like, you have to... That is a team, like when Texas or another program of that elk is at their best, That's a game where you look up and it's 60-3.
Yeah.
And they're said they're winning like 28-7.
And there's a difference between, you know, okay, sure, he's not throwing for 300 yards, but you can at least hope that somebody of that stature would have 60% completion percentage, 65,
just hit a drag route,
70. But
that's really all I'm asking for.
But the fact that his percentage is like 55 in college, and that's the other thing. It's college. There's quarterbacks who are throwing like 78% completion percentage.
You mentioned like he's not an NFL quarterback. Like NFL quarterbacks got to be the furthest thing from what we're talking about with Arch right now. Like he is so far behind. He's so far removed from being a good college quarterback. Like I know he might get drafted. Like if he went into the draft this year, he might get drafted because of the name on the back of his jersey. But
yeah,
good luck to
the
that.
The Saints
team
are like looking at it now, like, oh God, how do we break
maybe
into the
do we
Mannings?
Trade back?
Yeah,
trade back. All right, two quick questions. Let's answer these quickly, and we'll move on to Mount Rushmore plus one. Could Billy Napier lose his job this weekend if he loses to Miami? Obviously, pretty rough stretch for Florida. They lost to USF, and then they lost to, I'm blanking on the team they lost to next. But rough stretch for Florida so far with Billy Napier. We obviously know what happened last year.
Man, is he fired?
I don't see how he makes it through the season if it continues going this way. I guess the question more becomes, like, when does it happen?
I feel like Florida hasn't been
I'm pulling up the schedule.
Nervous
so,
about...
Oh, it was LSU. So they won their first week against LIU, whoever the hell that is. But next week, South Florida, at home, they lost 18-16. We all remember that. And then LSU beat them 20-10 the following week at LSU. Like I mean, look at their upcoming schedule, Cam. At Miami tonight, home for Texas, which we'll see. At Texas A&M, who looked great against Notre Dame. Well, they gave up 40 or whatever. But then you got Ole Miss on the schedule, Georgia on the schedule, Tennessee on the schedule. These are all top 20 teams. Like I think, Billy
and your expectation is to beat these SEC teams,
right? Like Billy Napier, he's already got two losses. Let's be pessimistic. Lose to Miami, that's three. Texas, four. A&M, that's five. Georgia 6 and Ole Miss 7, Tennessee 8. I mean, he could be looking at a 4-8 season. Oh, Florida State to close the year. He could be looking at a 3-win season.
So
honestly, 3-9 is it within the realm of possibility here.
I think how I look at it is the fact that they're playing number 4 Miami and then what is now number 8 Texas and then what will be number 10 A&M. Even if they lose all three of those games, I think the deciding factor is going to be that Mississippi State game.
I'm not making a decision on Billy Napier based upon what they do against Mississippi State. Now, if they lose it, sure. But like, if he wins it, that doesn't gain him any extra time.
No, I'm saying if he loses at Mississippi State, he's done.
He's got to go. He's got to go to me. Yeah. All right, really quick here. Mike Gundy did something that hasn't happened in like 50 years. They lost at home last night to Tulsa. They lost 19-12.
The Golden
at
Hurricanes
home against Tulsa. Is Mike Gundy done? We know what happened against Oregon a couple weeks ago. They got their asses handed to him, like 69-10 or something. Does Mike Gundy survive the season? Yes or no?
Yes.
I'm going to go no. All right.
I'm not confident about it though.
No, I know he was in the Big 12 title game 2 years ago in Texas this last year, which in that game they also got beat down pretty hard. But like things are falling off. He's crying about not getting money before he faces Oregon. Now he's losing to Tulsa for the first time in like the last 50 years of that program at home, scoring 12 points. And Big 12, like they're clearly towards the bottom of the Big 12. That could also be kind of like Billy Napier, a 3-4 win season. If that happens, I don't see how
he
survives.
Actually, now that I look at it, no, I don't think he survives.
All right, we got to get out. We're over here. Mount Rushmore plus one in the bullpen on the. Mount Rushmore plus one is next to the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Throughout the course of human history, singular moments have shaped who we are, who we'll become, and even the world as we know it. Some men discovered new worlds.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One man advocated for the need to hire a contractor.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Others put pizza on a bagel.
When pizza's on a bagel, you can eat pizza anytime.
These courageous men gazed upon a monument and asked, what if we add one more? This is Mount Rushmore Plus One.
Welcome in, Houston, to the best part of your weekend. Welcome into Mount Rushmore Plus One, the award-winning, game-changing, sports radio landscape-changing segment that will soon, one day, get Cam, John, myself, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, who was a part of it back in the day.
Maybe Sean. I think you have to have
Andrew
a certain
Carlson
amount of
part
appearances
of it as well.
To make it.
I mean, he's got more appearances than...
Than I do, actually, right now.
Yeah, so yeah. I think he still has the second most. And he's also a co-creator, so... But it'll get us in the Texas Radio Hall of Fame. I got to finish the line here, even though it might be at my own peril. If far less than the 27 years it took those bums, John Lance, to get into the Texas Radio Hall of Fame. I'm just saying that right now. 27 years, my ass. We'll be in 13. Max.
Half the time? Impeccable.
I might be a little... Reaching a little bit here. John,
I don't think
you did one the last time around. You want to lead us off here?
I can lead us off.
Opportunity. Yeah, go ahead and lead us off.
Yeah, because it's in relation to the conversation we just had about Arch Manning. So let me go ahead and
troll list.
Kick it off. Not really. But it is inspired by your disdain for the performance of Arch Manning so far in his young college career. My list is the Mount Rushmore Plus One of athletes that have not lived up to their family names.
Ooh,
over the
I like
years.
That. Okay.
And not fair to Arch because he still has a lot of time and a lot of opportunities to turn
no,
his
go around. Ahead and bash away, brother. He's ass right now.
Okay. well, I started local. Number five, Kevin Biggio.
Oh, yeah.
And he hasn't had, like, the worst Major League Baseball career.
I believe
career.
His, either rookie or second year was pretty promising, but it fell off quickly after that.
Nothing close to Hall of Fame father here, so... definitely made the list. Not high on the list compared to some of these others. But number four, going down here is Patrick Ewing Jr.
I forgot about him.
Patrick Ewing Jr. played in seven NBA games, scored three total points, all from the free throw line.
He never made a field goal.
Never made a field
career.
Goal.
Wow.
0.0 field goal.
I wonder
percentage.
If he even made the league if his last name wasn't Ewing.
Yeah, probably That's not.
Kind of, it feels like a Bronny situation.
It does. Bronny's better than this, which just says a lot here in this case. Number three, I went with Marcus Jordan. Everybody can understand exactly why. And at UCF, cost UCF a lot of money. They had a contract with Adidas, and he refused to wear Adidas, you know, because of the last name. So it cost them a lot of money. Never made it to the NBA. So Marcus Jordan on the list. Number two, now we start to get into what I think are really crazy ones here. Pete Rose Jr.
I didn't even know of a Pete Rose Jr.
Yep. Pete Rose Jr. was briefly brought up from the minors to play for the Cincinnati Reds.
Where's Papa played? Where's Papa betted?
Betted, yeah, there you go. That's, he played, but he also betted. Two hits and 14 at-bats. In his major league career, and then sent back
Sounds
down
like
to the
he
minors.
Plays for the Astros offense right now.
Does.
Hey-o.
It does.
He does have a lot of. He did have a lot of strikeouts in his.
Fits right in.
Nine strikeouts and 14 at-bats.
All right, what's number one on this list here, Johnny?
Number one, Jerry Rice Jr.
Oh, man.
Jerry Rice Jr., undrafted, played for UCLA, played one game with Washington or played was on Washington for like the practice squad stuff. Cut and then played one year in Canada. Never lived up. Played wide receiver, but never anywhere close. And maybe that's not really fair because Jerry Rice is the best of all time. But when your name is Jerry Rice,
you
can't suck at wide receiver.
As you're going through this list, there's obviously been a lot of really great athletes who had professional athlete parents.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to remember the last, like, top, like, a player who would be on the Mount Rushmore at their position in their sport. The last one of those who had a son who was nearly as good. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Because Ken Griffey Sr. wasn't...
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, Ken Griffey Sr. was a good player, so was Barry Bonds' player. But they weren't, like, a Mount Rushmore-level player. That's what I'm saying. Like, an all-time great, then having a kid who was also an all-time great. Has that happened? I can't think of one on top
Vladimir
of my head.
Vladimir Jr. is the closest, I think, maybe.
Yeah. That's a good one because he's going to be
Senior,
a really
Vlad
good player.
Jr., that's I mean, pretty good. Although, obviously, Vlad Jr. still got to play out the rest of his career.
We might get there with Marvin Harrison Jr. He had a decent
a great
rookie
point.
Year, and he had a good opening game this season, but I think that's the tour.
I obviously got a long way to go there. Yeah.
You know, the other thing, too, is not just Jerry Rice Jr., but Brendan Rice, who the Chargers drafted last year,
always
only played three games. And he always got...
Always
but I'm just saying,
back.
that to... to have two sons try to live up to Jerry Rice.
It's an impossible.
Well, it's impossible.
To be fair, though, to be fair though, if your name is not Jerry, people may not recognize that you're you know, son. But when your name is Jerry Rice Jr.,
it's going to be tough to run from that. All right, Cam, what's your list this week?
So my list, and shout out to Florida for this.
The whole state or the program?
The whole state of Florida.
Okay.
My thing is stupid things Florida people have done so far this year.
This could be a Mount Rushmore plus affinity.
It could. Really could.
You could make this a whole running series, but go ahead.
Maybe. First one. Alligator attack survivor was then shot and killed by cops 2 hours later.
Oh, man. He survived the alligator and then gets...
So apparently he survived the alligator, and then 2 hours later, cops received a call from the same man who had survived the alligator attack saying that he was growling at neighbors and arming himself with garden shears, then tried to break into a house, was tased by cops, and obviously they had to take extra measures to subdue him.
There's obviously some missing details in that story, but that's awful.
That's
go
pretty
ahead.
Crazy.
Yeah, go ahead.
The next one... not the sticky bandit from Home Alone, but the nail bandit. So apparently a man was shooting sharp objects at...
What, he had a nail gun or something?
Yeah, at passing by emergency vehicles.
Oh, my God.
Emergency vehicles, fire truck and
ambulances?
EMS. I mean, that's not funny, but like...
Only emergency vehicles, not just regular people.
He was clearly targeting one specific, of all the people I could get back at in this world, the people that wronged me, it's the people trying to save a man from a heart attack right now.
Oh, Florida. The next one, this is actually pretty comical. An elderly gentleman used his surveillance systems to activate sprinklers on his disabled neighbors.
Oh, God. All right, next.
That was me.
I don't even want to talk about that one. Next.
A Florida man swallows $1.3 million in stolen jewelry after the cops pull him over and realize they can't find it.
Man, that sounds like a painful exit.
Starts complaining about stomach issues, go to the hospital, do an x-ray, and sure enough, there's $1.3 million worth of jewelry.
So we're talking like watches and necklaces? Like what are we, like a necklace might pass depending on like what else it's got with it, but like a watch?
So according to this.
That sounds like a painful exit.
He impersonated an Orlando Magic basketball player and represented himself at Tiffany Company's jewelry.
They bought it?
They bought it, and he ended up swallowing stolen earrings and a ring.
An earring. That's got a sharp point, brother. That's good. I mean, that could do some damage going out.
I can't imagine how it comes out.
All right, what's number one?
The next one. This one is actually comical because nobody really got hurt. But a foot fetish man runs over a model's foot after she asked him for $1,000 to sniff her
shoes.
Was
this Rex Ryan?
No.
It sounded like it could be Rex Ryan.
This was not
Rex
Ryan.
Let's pretend that it was Rex Ryan.
Okay.
I cannot believe Rex Ryan did that.
Yeah. How dare her ask me $1,000?
How dare she ask Rex Ryan?
Feet and shoes, yeah. So
let's try not to get sued for defamation here. So although I think we have a case, there's video evidence.
It's definitely not Rex Ryan.
But let's pretend it is.
But it's funnier
funnier to pretend it is. All right, my Mount Rushmore plus one, not as crazy as that. But this is a football season related thing. Like, you know, when I'm in my house watching a football game, I think we're all like this when we watch a game. And especially if we're watching our team, you know, we're passionate, we're into it, reacting to what's happening. And if something happens that should or shouldn't be a flag, I think we often find ourselves doing the motion of what that flag would be, like the referee's signal for that penalty or that whatever happened in the game. So this is my Mount Rushmore plus one. Of football signals I'm most likely to pantomime myself like I'm the referee during the game.
Okay, I like this.
You with me? All right. First one, this is not technically a penalty. It's more like why a penalty isn't called, but it's the uncatchable sign for pass interference. Like if the ball's like out of bounds, you see the referee. Yes, John knows exactly. Like I'll do that so many times where I see my DB from my team like make contact. I'm like, no, uncatchable, bro. You'll see me making that sign. That's number one on my list. Number two is holding. We all do you see the block, holding, bring that back, bring that bleep back. We're all making the holding sign in our house. So that one gets pantomimed quite a bit as well. A false start, we all do that, right? Your defense is fired up, it's third down. Maybe the crowd got to him and you see the guy. And you're standing up, you start doing the false start motion.
It's a dance move, too.
Yeah, it's 100%. All right, two more in here. Pass interference. Like if my receiver goes down the field, he doesn't catch the ball, but there's contact. I'm putting the hands out. I'm putting the hands out. Pass interference, bro. Throw the flag. And the number one on my list, I think this is probably the most pantomimed even from players too, but it's first down. Like they're like anytime, especially in the big drive, teams from behind or maybe trying to put them away, you know, 4 minute offense trying to milk the clock. The first down signal in a big moment is an automatic. I got to do it too. I got to help the referee put my arm out.
That's definitely the one that everybody does. I'm surprised that the, you know, throwing a flag from the hip, you know, like, I know it's not specific, but
I went with specific calls, but you're right. I do that as one, that one as well. Any other calls come up for you guys off the top of your head? Also, I didn't put this on my list, but I also do personal fouls sometimes. I'm doing the arm across the arm.
Yeah, encroachment.
You gotta be careful.
That was interesting. Interesting list.
One segment left here to go. Mount Rushmore over for this week, but when we get back, I'll reveal the final two picks on my worst regular season losses in Texans history. Plus, we'll get into the worst people in sports and what we love from sports. That one, the bullpen returns. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. One final segment today on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. So before we get into our worst people in sports and what we love from sports this week, as we always do to finish the show, the final two in my power ranking of the worst regular season losses in Texans history. If you missed the earlier ones, number five was the Jags Hail Mary loss in 2010 that Glover Quinn batted into a Jaguars, Jaguar Mike Thomas right into his hands. The Letterman jacket game was three, and then I accidentally went out of order here. Number four was the Rosencopter game. So those were five, four, and three. Two left. Now, these made the list because they were embarrassing like the other losses, but these also had high stakes on the line for the Texans. In both cases, one in 2011, one in 2012, had they won this game, the Texans would have either probably gotten a bye or would have been far more likely to get the bye. And in neither case did they get the bye, obviously back when the NFL playoffs have two byes. So number two on the list, 2012 against the Vikings. The Texans were 12-2 coming into a home game against the Christian Ponder-led Vikings and lost. And not only lost, like barely score. Like it was not even a competitive game. Like the Christian Ponder-led Vikings. The Texans were 12-2 the week before they beat the Colts to clinch the AFC South. 12-2, and they go and lose to the Christian Ponder-led Vikings to lose any chance they had at a bye. And number one on the list, same thing. They lost their chance at a bye. 2011, the Texans were 10-4 going into a Thursday night road game against the Colts. Okay, that doesn't sound bad on the surface. Like, why is that embarrassing? Because the Colts had one win and were quarterbacked by Dan Orlovsky, and the Texans lost with the chance to get a bye. That is number one on my list.
That's a bad one.
Yeah, it's real bad. I remember the party I threw with me and my buddies. We were all hyped. Texas scored on their first drive, I believe it was an Arian Foster touchdown, and didn't do jack squat the rest of the game. It was a rough one. All right, so we'll finish up here with our worst people in sports and what we love from sports this week. My worst person in sports, Stephen A. Smith, for this, ESPN has their first WWE card tonight on the ESPN app. WrestlePalooza happening in Indianapolis tonight at 6 o'clock. And Stephen A. Smith, I guess to honor this momentous occasion, gave his top five wrestlers of all time. Most of them made sense until he got to number one, John.
Maybe it was the intro. Maybe it was the walk to the arena. Maybe it was what he did when he went with like 175-0 to start his career. Put it up there right now, please. Number one. Goldberg!
Wow!
Yes, sir! That's my guy right there! Goldberg himself!
Let me break this down for you, right? What he does for a profession is piss people off, right?
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
So what he did is he bait and switched you. He set up a list that is arguably accurate. The Road Warriors, The Rock, Hogan, Flair. He left out a few because it's just the top five. But then what he does is he comes in and he Stephen A's it and he goes, Goldberg at number one, because he knows that is the name that is going to piss off maximum amount of people at all time, putting Goldberg on that one. Now, I'm not going to say he's not great. I love Bill. I think he was a great performer, had great moments in this business. But putting him at one?
At one, bro.
Come on.
That other voice, that of the chief content creator, Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Paul Levesque, if you will. But he's absolutely right. That has to be what Stephen A. was doing here. He was going for the his list was fine. Although Road Warriors was a little suspect, but his list was fine. And then he decided to put Goldberg, like arguably one of the worst wrestlers of all time, that's injured so many people, damn near killed the Undertaker in Saudi Arabia like 4 years ago, and he puts him at number one. That can only be a troll job from Stephen A. But what else would you expect?
Nothing.
Yeah. All right. So who's your worst person in sports, Cam?
My worst person is an entire football team. And that football team is the UCLA Bruins, who have fallen to 0-3 after getting mollywopped to New Mexico by 35-10 in a game in which they paid New Mexico $1.2 million to travel to California. And this is also a New Mexico team who has a first-year head coach and over 70 new players.
Yeah, because Diego Pavia was on that team a couple years ago, and he obviously transferred to Vanderbilt. I'm trying to remember the name of that UCLA coach, but I remember he had an embarrassing...
Deshaun Foster.
Yes. Remember that press conference he had at like Big Ten Media Days a couple years, like, hi, I'm Deshaun Foster.
Yeah.
I coached UCLA. We're a school in California. It's in Southern California with a pop. It was so weird.
He's a robot.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm with that. That's a bad loss there. All right. Let's stop swimming with the anger sharks. Go ahead and doggy paddle. Or just see a train quickly. Take a deep breath and talk about what we loved in sports this week. What I loved in sports this week. Also wrestling, Johnny. We're going to hear two things about wrestling. And this is on game day this morning. Game day this morning when they're making picks for college football games. Also made picks for tonight's Brock Lesnar versus John Cena match. And actually got Nick Saban involved. I love this clip you're about to hear where they got Nick Saban to talk wrestling. Go ahead, Johnny.
Ricky Stanicki was amazing. Peacemaker is certainly fantastic. And he committed his life to the WWE and took the WWE to places it had never seen. John Cena is certainly being billed as the GOAT in this particular fight for good reason. He is that. But he's taking on the beast, Brock Lesnar. His arms hang down to his shins. He was an NFL player. He's in the WWE. He is a world heavyweight champion in the UFC. And tonight, he beats the hell out of John Cena at WrestlePalooza in Indianapolis.
Not so fast, my friend. John Cena, you can't see me.
Yes, that was the voice of Nick Saban, billion-time national champion, hitting the Lee Corso not so fast, my friend, which great tribute there. But then going into the John Cena catch line of, you can't see me. The fact that the ESPN has Nick Saban making John Cena taunting references, I love it.
Yeah, they had to tell him that was
probably
the
so. Yeah. That has to eat at the non-wrestling fans that they turn into here college football picks, and they're picking Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. Suck it, non-wrestling fans.
It's Nick, too.
Yes, exactly. That made it... Yes, the fact that he got Nick Saban, of all people. All right, that'll do it for the show this week. We got about 45
seconds. Doesn't Cam
get
to give his?
Oh, my bad, Cam.
It's okay.
Yeah,
oh,
what you
wow.
love. That's my bad. It's okay. My love also was skipping Cam, but go ahead.
Well, thank you. My love in sports is a 58-year-old man by the name of Thomas Sillo, who has enrolled in college and will be supposedly starting freshman defensive lineman at Lycoming College, a Division III school.
Did you say his age? Was it like 58?
He is 58 years old.
Incredible. And he's starting.
That's crazy.
All right, we got about 20 seconds left here quickly. I think we picked the game earlier, but what's your score prediction for Jags Texans?
I'm going to go Texans
quicker.
20, Jacksonville 14.
Jags 20, Texans 17. All right, that'll do it for the bullpen. For Cam Smith, for John Belmer, I am Brian McDonald. Talk to you next week in Houston.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.